Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Fantasy NBA Today podcast.
Why am I doing it live on Twitter and YouTube? I don't know. I really don't know. This is the off season. I do what I want. Welcome to Fantasy NBA Today, everybody. I am Dan Vespris. Nothing changes around these parts. We've got a show to do. My personal hygiene may slip even more. Those that are watching live can already see it happening in real time. Take care of your damn beard, Dan. Well, this is what happens. Manscaped doesn't sponsor us in the offseason, so I just stopped taking care of myself. Ugly mug. All right, so here's the skinny, everybody. Season's over. Fantasy season's done. Playoffs begin tomorrow with the play-in tournament stuff. And then we go to the playoffs, and then we roll our way through. The generalized schedule of the offseason is play-in, playoffs, draft, free agency, long, long dead period, NBA Summer League, training camp, ramp up. It all sounds so brief and fast when I say it like that, but it's a haul. From our standpoint, the offseason's a little bit different because there's not a huge reason for us to cover the playoffs in any strict capacity. We'll do some light betting chatter on the playoffs as we rumble our way through. It's just something I like to sort of keep my eye on. You know, I got Lakers, Pelicans, and Warriors, Kings on Tuesday. We've got, you know, initial brackets set for Tuesday, Wednesday. We'll get into the lines on those games a little bit on the day of the games. And we might look at some series prices as well, just because it's fun. I have a history of betting, and this is sort of a time of a year where I can bring some of that to you guys. In addition, this is a time of year where we need to do a pretty strong look back to kind of see how the season went. Was it a successful year by and large? By the way, short answer there is yes, it very much was. I was in five cash roto leagues. One of them is a keeper league where this is a rebuild year for me. The other four cash roto leagues, I did no worse than getting my buy-in back. I think there was a buy-in back, second place and two first places in those four leagues. And usually, if my teams are dunking, that means your teams are dunking, because most of what I do, I talk about on a podcast. And then you guys can all do it too. So we're going to go through how the season went. My favorite part of going through how the season went is trying to figure out the players that ended up on some of my teams that were bad. Meaning, how did we end up here? One that pops to mind quickly is Darius Garland. How the hell did he end up on two of my teams when he wasn't on any of my boards? He wasn't on the old man squad board. He wasn't on the I think this is going to be a good board. Like, he was almost on the avoid board, and I didn't quite put him there because I thought he would be fine but unspectacular. You know, everybody was looking for assists in the 30s or whatever it is. And I thought, what's worst case scenario? Like 50 something? Nope. How does that guy end up on my team? I don't know. Today, I don't know. But on a future show, we'll tell you, give you a good rundown of how it all happened. We will be going through the Dan Vesper's Old Man Squad in excruciating detail. We will be going through the Yahoo boards in excruciating detail. We will have many a show that's just exclusively dedicated to lessons learned from a season gone by. Those are some of my absolute favorite shows to do. Because now is the time when we can pause the game. This is like if you're in the middle of a sporting event or anything, honestly. Because in a sporting event, you can take a timeout. And in video games, you can press pause as well. This is like our ability to take the season and pause. To say, what are we missing? We're caught up in the micro. Minute to minute, day to day, whatever it is, week to week, if you're in head to head. You're so caught up in the micro. How do you pause that and step back and say, what am I doing wrong right now? How do I get better at this? And maybe, how can I just avoid it altogether next year? There's always a handful of ways. Some of the lessons that we'll talk about will be ones that we've mentioned in the past. Things that need to be reiterated, either because I personally did them again, or they're just so out there and obvious that they need to be restated. Some of them will be new. Some of them will go with the grain. Some of them will cut against the grain of what's being discussed in the fantasy community at large. And the honest truth on that is, I don't even really know what the grain is. I follow Twitter, so if people are saying things on Twitter, I might see it. But otherwise, I don't really know. So, the good news for you guys is nothing I say is ever going to be really clouded by anything being said out in the community because I don't have the presence of mind to go find it. I don't know what the hell is going on around here. So all of that is coming up. We're going to have team reviews and then team previews. The reviews, we try to look at each team individually and basically give them an entire show to see who performed well, why, and how that relates to players we've maybe already talked about a little bit. This is a low-pressure time of year, that's for darn sure, because, you know, seasons are wrapped up. What I would ask here, before we dive in, oh, by the way, we're also going to have a show at some point this week or next week where we're going to talk to the big dog, Aaron Brewski, about how his extraordinarily high buy-in leagues went, because that's usually a pretty good kind of cross-section data point, maybe a better word for it, as to how the B150 did in a given year. Did it lead to Aaron winning tens of thousands of dollars? Yeah, probably went okay. So we'll talk to Brew. We'll get some fun stories about the end of the season in leagues where people are trying to win $15,000 to $20,000 on the last day of a roto league. That's crazy. We'll go through some of my own leagues. Also, if you guys are interested in it, you know what? I don't even care if you're interested in it. We're going to do it anyway because I got like 120 shows to fill here. And that means some of them are probably going to be big winners and some of them are going to be, oh my goodness, I'm out of ideas. And we're going to talk about this today. To that end, what are we going to talk about on the very first day of the offseason? Well, I thought I'd go with kind of a Occam's razor. Simplest solution is often the correct one here. The simplest solution to the question, what are we going to do on the first day of the offseason, is talk about the last day of the season. Because it's the weirdest day of the year, and there really isn't anything even in the ballpark of it, because half the teams in the NBA aren't playing any of their starters. We all made 5-6 adds and drops on the very last day of the season in roto leagues because you just want to make sure you can feel the full lineup, and there are going to be some guys playing 40 minutes that played zero the week before. And our goal today is going to be to figure out, first of all, how Dan splashed water on his glasses in the middle of a podcast. And second of all, to figure out, was anything that we saw on the last, 1 or 2 days of the season Was any of it real? I don't even know what I look like without glasses. I'm trying to look at the image, but I don't know. Oh, they're back on. I can see again. So, let's do this. Let's throw up the last day of the season's box scores. Almost like we're doing a regular show here. But instead of going through the games line by line, the whole deal, blah, blah, blah. Instead of doing all that, we're going to blitz through. But we're going to stop at a couple of junctures along the way and talk about players that have a path without anything significant changing for them. Because, yes, there were 15 games. We're not going to really talk about all 30 teams on this show. But there were a handful of spots of guys that need our focus or deserve our focus as we trickle towards the offseason and then next year. What about the Charlotte? And we'll go through the games one by one. Charlotte, Cleveland. Big games for JT Thor, Marcus Bolden, Leaky Black, Nick Smith Jr., Bryce McGowans. Does any of that matter? It does not. It does not. And I'm not even going to give you reasons why, because there are like 9 guys out for Charlotte. Cleveland, big games for Max Strus, who triple-doubled in this one. Isaac Okoro, George Niang. Does any of that matter? Yeah, you know what? I think it actually does. I think the Max Strus stuff does matter. And he was a guy that I took heat for being maybe a little bit too high on. And look, I'll wear that. But the other part of the Max Strus story, is that he was clearly playing hurt for stretches this year. And over the last stretch of the season, when he came back playing better, he shot 46% instead of 41, and he was right around the edge of the top 100. So, you know, I don't know what a deep explanation is going to do here. And yeah, obviously at the beginning of the year when he was cruising along at like a top 60 clip, some of that was because some guys were out, which, look, I mean, that could happen again. And, you know, does he step into a slightly larger role? Maybe. But over this last little stretch, since coming back from injury, he was about 12 points, 2.5 threes, 5.5 boards, 5-plus assists, a steal, stopped blocking shots on 45.5% shooting from the field, 83 at the free throw line. Max Strus profiles as a guy going into next year whose role is, at least for the moment, seemingly not in any sort of grave danger. Probably more interesting on head-to-head than Roto because, I mean, you know, what do we really need a top 105 guy on a Roto league? But also some of that was at 2.1 turnovers. You know, if that's like 1.5 instead of 2, then he's inside the top 100. That's all it would have taken to get him there. So I think there was a lot of animosity sent his way. And, you know, again, I get it because he missed a bunch of games kind of late in the year. He still got to 70, by the way, out of 82, which ain't bad. He just probably played hurt for too damn long. So I think Max Strus is actually kind of a quiet, small value going into next year that we saw towards the end of the season. Not even a silly season guy, necessarily. Brooklyn played all basic, well, not all reserves, because Mikal Bridges wanted to get into these last games. Cam Thomas played here, as did Nick Claxton for 20 minutes, but we got big games out of Noah Clowney, decent game out of Trendon Watford, and those are kind of the only notables here at the end of the season. Brooklyn still claims that they're committed to Ben Simmons. Cam Johnson will likely play again. I mean, but listen, yeah, some of these guys on this team whose contracts are going to expire, and we'll dig into that a little bit more when we get into the sort of the team-by-team situation. I would say one, just a couple of names to keep an eye on would be Clowney and Watford. Probably more so Clowney, but I wouldn't go too deep on that one. And then for Philadelphia, no, nothing there that you really need to take into your offseason. Atlanta's box score is actually kind of a little bit of an okey-doke because you got Moji, who had a nice ball game, Murray, Bogdanovich, these are all pretty reasonable. Trey Young is actually back here. DeAndre Hunter had 6 points. Bruno Fernando started and was terrible. Somehow I keep splashing myself on today's show. I don't know what's going on with me. The Hawks, you don't need to pay a ton of attention to because Jalen Johnson was out, and he's obviously going to go much earlier this coming season. But more than anything, you should be watching what happens with the center spot. Is Clint Capella actually going to be on the roster at the start of next year? That's the way you decide where you're going with that one. Indy. You guys didn't think I was going to stop on Indy, but I am. And I think TJ McConnell is the name to really watch closely on Indiana. Now, he did end up with more to do when Benedict Mathurin went down. And so that could sort of wedge more minutes into larger bodies. But I don't know that any of that is necessarily locked in. The Pacers just sort of got good. Their second unit in particular got good when they started to say, okay, you know what, TJ McConnell, you just go in there, you play 19 minutes and go fully nuts for him. Maximum TJ. If that's a thing that maybe carries over, I think McConnell's worth a late grab next year. And I think what we saw at the end of this season is potentially translatable. Washington, you know, we have to wait and find out if they're going to be leaning even harder into a tank next year, because if they are, you've got a few things to look at. You'll have the Marvin Bagley, Rashawn Holmes situation. Tristan Vukcevic is also a situation. But again, we don't really know what's going to be going on with Jordan Poole or Kyle Kuzma or Tyus Jones. So you can't read too much into this, but in terms of players from this ball game to watch, do we think Patrick Baldwin is going to just suddenly emerge? I mean, Jared Butler was an interesting sort of point guardy type of guy that I thought we could look at if Jordan Poole got shut down earlier, which he didn't. Took him till the last damn day to do it. But these are not guys that I'm making a move on because we don't know exactly how hard the Washington tank is going to be next year. Boston, you're not doing anything with this stuff at the end of the season. Milwaukee, you're not doing anything with this stuff at the end of the season. Orlando, Jonathan Isaac got the start here. That was largely because Wendell Carter Jr. was benched and they just decided to try a different look. But boy, howdy, was that an interesting one. You are going to have a hard time convincing me not to spend a late Roto Games cap pick on Jonathan Isaac next year, because look at what that man did in 26 minutes. Now, look, obviously, this is a game where the Magic were like, hey, let's play Jonathan Isaac, like, decent minutes, because he's going to have, what, a week to recover, basically, before their first playoff game? A little bit less than that? Great! I mean, this is the kind of thing you're going to see. Outstanding. Head-to-head, it's going to be a massive headache, and even in Roto, you're going to have some intermittent headaches mixed in there, but if suddenly, like, if you're looking towards next year, and the playoffs might give us more information on this, if you're looking towards next season and thinking, should I be spending like a 13th round pick on Jonathan Isaac just from this moment alone? I think we did get something out of this last day.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Cool. Toronto, they were in full tank mode, so I don't think you need to read too much into it. I'm not a Grady Dick fantasy guy. Not a Javon Freeman Liberty fantasy guy. There's too many pieces that were missing for this one, so no. But, again, looking at Scotty Barnes, he'll have a gigantic role next year. Presumably, Emmanuel Quickley have a pretty big role. Likely to get overdrafted because of his scoring. Same with RJ Barrett. Gary Trent should be able to do enough, and then, you know, questions on Jakob Poeltl and Kelly Olynyk will creep in, but we'll deal with those when we get there. Miami, not super interested in deep diving the Heat right now. Chicago, I mean, you know, presumably Zach LaVine will play again at some point. That's going to throw a wrench into whatever they got going on next year. Is it going to crush Ayo Dosunmu? Is it going to crush Kobe White? Is it going to crush nobody? Is DeMar DeRozan even going to be back? Can't read almost anything into what's going on with Chicago because we haven't a clue who their studs are going to be next year. For the Knicks, we'll see what goes on with Mitchell Robinson and we'll learn more as the playoffs go on, but his conditioning is bad and Isaiah Hartenstein has kind of jumped him here anyway. So, you're good there. Lakers, no. I mean, if you're looking towards the future, nothing that happened during the silly season here was all that meaningful, and plus they figure to have Jared Vanderbilt back down the line, so a lot of the Rui Hachimura stuff kind of evaporates a tad. No super deep dive on New Orleans, although, again, like, there's just no way you could use Jonas Valanciunas again, and we got the handicap right, we just got it right at the wrong time. JV fell off a cliff. The whole season, I thought this was going to be his role, squeezed to the periphery by Zion at center and Larry Nance, and then it just took half the year. But, I mean, look, like, if you're looking towards next year, Herb Jones, Trey Murphy will be, it's solid, but, not spectacular. CJ, Zion, Brandon Ingram, all that stuff. When the main guys are in, then the other guys get squeezed a little bit. I just don't know that there's a center you could draft on that New Orleans team, and I kind of think they'll do something about that. Denver, nothing happened during silly season to think about. Memphis was all silly season, and you can just throw all of it out because they're literally missing an entire starting five. I believe it is the entire starting. Marcus Smart, Desmond Bane, Jaren Jackson Jr. I'm forgetting at least two other guys. They traded Steven Adams, question mark? They sat Brandon Clark in this one. Keep an eye on what they plan on doing with Brandon. Brandon Clark would probably be the biggest piece of news, but I don't think any of these guys are playing more than a handful of minutes next year. Portland, similar story. I know they're in tank mode, but like we saw DeAndre Ayton mostly play down the stretch. The only guy that played down the stretch for Portland that will play good minutes next year is probably Scoot. And I don't know when the hell he's going to get drafted. Probably too early, but he's a guy to keep an eye on. Kings, I would wait to see if they clear out room for Keon Ellis. Now, they obviously badly miss Malik Monk because they just have no firepower when De'Aaron Fox hits the bench these days, or at least not consistent enough firepower. And Keon Ellis is not a guy that's going to fill the firepower void. Malik Monk was that guy. So, I'd say keep an eye on Keon Ellis. He's an interesting name that popped up here during silly season that could pose some sort of value down the line. Utah is a tough one because Taylor Hendricks had value like one out of every four games, and that's with the entire lineup out, basically. So again, you're missing, in this ball game, they didn't even play Colin Sexton, but he played most of the games down the stretch. So Colin Sexton, John Collins, Walker Kessler, Lauri Markkanen, the list goes on and on and on and on and on. This Utah team, no takeaways from silly season, even if they play Hendricks next year. There's really no expectation that he's going to see a bunch of usage. And then someone like a Keontae George, who's really got to play his way into a more efficient standpoint. The Warriors, someone would have to move, we'd have to see something in the offseason to make any valuation changes there. Detroit, Jalen Duren presumably will be the main guy in the middle, so this giant James Wiseman game doesn't really click onto the radar. Azar Thompson next year should be interesting. I don't think I would take the Simone Fontecchio chance if this team's truly healthy. As far as silly season went, Marcus Sasser, Shemezi Metu, those guys played well down the stretch, but they won't have enough playing time next year, so I don't think there's much to take away there. San Antonio, again, also the same deal, not really much to take away from silly season. A lot of guys that won't see the same playing time because they shut down a bunch of their main dudes. Grayson Allen just signed a very long extension. Well, that's not the very long, it's like 4-year extension with the Suns, so I think you can probably just play the same five guys. That's the only thing to take away there. If you're you don't even have to read the tea leaves. They just made Grayson a part of their main core, and he was one of the best picks all year, or pickups. Nothing popped up for Minnesota down the stretch. You can throw that out. Nothing really popped up for Dallas down the stretch. You can throw that out other than to just say, look, hey, Daniel Gafford, when they gave him the reins, he was damn good. Nothing for OKC. Houston was interesting because we got a big fat dose of Amen Thompson down the stretch, and he was awesome. I don't have a clue where that dude's going to get drafted next year, but it feels like they're going to have to carve out some kind of time for him. I don't think you can say the same thing about Cam Whitmore, who needs way more shots to be fantasy relevant. And again, this is a game with no Freddie Van Vliet, no Dylan Brooks. Jalen Green did play in this one. Obviously no Alperen Şengün, who's been out for a while here. So, you know, guys like Jock Landale playing more. Jabari Smith Jr. actually played this ball game, and he ended up having an okay season. Nothing super spectacular, but good enough. Top 90 range. If he improves his field goal percent a little bit more next year, that's how he likely continues to climb the board. And maybe there's a case to be made that that could happen. But in terms of what to take away from Houston, Amen Thompson looks awesome. I don't know if you guys saw this, by the way. Boban missed two free throws on purpose so that the fans in LA could win free Chick-fil-A, I think. It's hilarious. And then the Clippers, I could not possibly care less, because even when a star was out for this team, nobody stepped up. They needed multiple guys out for anyone else to post fantasy value. And the only way that that happens is if Kawhi ends up hurt and Paul George ends up going to Philly or something like that, because that rumor is bouncing around right now. Otherwise, you know, it's going to be low-end Zubats, and it's going to be whatever superstars are floating around. And that's been happening on the last day of the regular season. And I know we may not have taken a ton away from that, but there are just a few names. If you're jotting them down, if you got a Google Sheet or a scratch pad or whatever, just a few names to say, you know what, maybe this is something we shouldn't totally throw out going into next year. Maybe just keep it in the back of your mind. And what were some of those names we just talked about? Max Strus looking a bit more fluid when he got his knees back underneath him. TJ McConnell, who played well for the last month and a half of the season, but nobody was really paying attention to it. Brooklyn, if they decide to go another way in the front court, someone like a Noah Clowney could be potentially interesting. He wasn't good for very long at the end of the year, but he was good a little bit. Jonathan Isaac on the Roto side, that last game was extremely interesting for J.I. Who the hell else did we talk about here on this show as we were scrolling through everybody? Keon Ellis on Sacramento was one that I thought jumped out a little bit. And Grayson Allen, who was great all year. And Amen Thompson. So those are your kind of like guys that did a bunch of stuff the last anywhere from one day to 6 weeks that I think we shouldn't just completely throw out. And I think that's kind of the main thing to take away from today's show. Couple of stuff from the chat room. Cool to see a few of you guys actually still here. I don't know why you are, but I very much appreciate it. Matthew says, how are we feeling about heading into the offseason now, Dan? Thanks for another great season. Can't appreciate enough what you do for fantasy hoops. You are most welcome, Matthew. I do my very best. I want to try to bring as many eyeballs as I can to Sports Ethos and try to get all of us some wins. Ultimately, the B150 is going to be the thing that carries us all here at Ethos, so I hope you guys have all checked that out at some point over the years. How am I feeling about heading to the offseason? Pretty good. You know, unfortunately, the Keeper League, where I'm in a rebuild, is my most expensive league. So on a rebuild year there, it's going to put a big dent into whatever profits I get in my other leagues. But this was a really good year for me. I made the finals in 30 deep for the second year in a row. Lost in the semifinals in two head-to-head leagues. Lost in the finals in another head-to-head league, but you make money there. And then in the Yahoo one, you can win the third place game to actually make money, like $20, which I did, but, you know, better than zero. And then in Roto, again, every league where I wasn't in rebuild, I either broke even or made a bunch of money. So feeling good, guys. I hope you guys are too. Patrick says, the final week of the season is so random with all the injuries and rest. I'll definitely be taking your advice and ending my league earlier next year. Oh, yes, Patrick. We will definitely have a show on ways to save head-to-head leagues. Because, look, I think you guys should all switch to Roto. That's the easiest solution to all of this. But I also realize that you're not all going to do it. So I'm going to keep saying, try Roto. But if you don't, we have to come up with solutions on the head-to-head side. I thought Josh had a really good one with instituting head-to-head weekly games caps, so that you can't just stream all day all the time, and if someone gets hurt on your team, you can kind of fill in those missed games somewhere else. It minimizes the impact of rest days and injuries, and that's kind of what you want to do. Not that they can't have some impact, because, like, look, if your superstar goes down in a head-to-head league, you're going to have a harder time winning. But it shouldn't be because your opponent just not only because you're missing your superstar, but also taking four zeros. In a games cap, you lose your good guy, but you can plug in your, you know, 12th best player. So at least there's a drop-off from very good to serviceable instead of from very good to goose egg. So that's helpful. And then, Patrick, what you're talking about is got to end it early. I thought 3 weeks would be enough, but it might actually need to be four. What up, Dan? Did you see Boban miss two free throws on purpose? I did. Corn dogs, Jackie. Corn dogs, Matt says. Yeah, Boban, dude, Boban's the man. I wish I knew how many times over the course of a year Chick-fil-A has to do that promotion. But by the way, this is like one of the things that I want to be part of the All-Star break. I know everybody's like, how do you fix the All-Star game? And a lot of people are like, scrap it all together. And I think full, like, Super Smash TV. Do you guys remember that game for regular and Super Nintendo? Where, I mean, we obviously it wouldn't be NBA players trying to, like, kill their way out of a video game. But that kind of thing, where there's just, like, stuff flying from the sky and people running at them. I want, in the All-Star game, I want, like, five dudes in, like, miscellaneous rainbow-colored jerseys just come running out on the court and try to defend, and guys have to go, like, 5-on-15 for a play. I want 10-point things lighting up on the ground. I want, like, a chicken logo at center court, and I want Steph to pull up and hit a shot from the chicken logo when it appears for 10 seconds, and if he makes it, I want frickin' Chick-fil-A nuggets to literally fall from the rafters. Give me all the lunacy. Timbo says, hey, I won my league yesterday. Thanks for the advice. You're welcome, dude. I'm glad you did. Brian says, same as Timbo. That's outstanding. You guys winning fills my tummy with joy. Almost as much joy as eating nuggets and corn dogs. Razor says, is Hartenstein the starting center next season? Boy, it sure looks like it, doesn't it?
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
Luckily, we don't have to know yet. They'll reveal that during training camp. But sure seems like he's worth the draft pick next year. Metalhead. I thought that said Meathead. Metalhead says, would field goal percent and free throw percent be the most scarce category on waivers? In this case, is it best to just forego these categories if you missed out on players that are strong on these during the draft? Yes and no. They are very hard to find impact players for the percentages on waivers as the season goes on, because a lot of the guys you pick up are not going to be big volume dudes that can swing that hard in one direction or the other. So that part is true. In Roto, the solution there is you just can't afford to miss out on the players that are good in those. You can't lose both percentages in Roto and still win. You have to be somewhat successful. Head-to-head, you can, because the week-to-week variability of it makes it so that even if your team is not great at it, you can still sort of wiggle your way through. And sometimes having, you know, one big guy you pick up off waivers that goes 3-for-4 in four games during a week, that can actually swing it. So I would say yes in general, but I also wouldn't avoid taking the plunge on guys that are decent in percentages just because your team isn't that great at them in the moment. I always tell this story of a year I don't remember what year it was. I'm sure I could look it up. All right, let's look up Jonas Valanciunas. I want to figure out what year. There was one season where he missed like 6 weeks with a really bad ankle sprain. I think that might have been 18-19, possibly? 2018-2019 with Memphis and Toronto. He got traded. That sound right? I think that's right. So I think it was 18-19. He got traded from Toronto to Memphis mid-season and had a bad ankle sprain with the Grizzlies and missed like 20 ball games in the middle of the year. I'm in a league. It's a private league with friends with only one IL spot. At that point, it wasn't even IL plus, but that didn't really have a bearing on this. And JV got dropped because in Toronto that year, he was playing 19 minutes and he was like a top 90, top 100 kind of guy. So that guy being out for 6 to 8 weeks, you don't hold a top 100 guy for that long. But in Memphis, it looked like his job was going to be bigger. But the team had 3 or 4 injured players in a head-to-head league, meaning they were just wearing it and had to drop him. And so I stashed Jonas Valanciunas for 6 weeks, barely hanging on. Got pretty lucky that other guys on my team didn't get hurt, because then I probably would have had to drop somebody too. And I went on and won rebounds and field goal percent in 1 or 2 playoff battles after I thought I was punting them. Now, admittedly, someone like JV popping up on the wire with a 26-minute-per-game outlook where he was shooting 55% on really high volume that year. That's the type of guy that's not going to pop up on waiver wires very often. But you just never know what's going to surface, and it's one of the reasons that I loathe punting from the beginning of the year. Loathe it. Mid-season? Okay, fine. If you get to January and your team is just dog-doing something, yeah, move on. The big-time player probably isn't going to pop up. Maybe someone emerges during the silly season, but hopefully we've ended our year before that creeps in. So on and so forth. What round do you think Jalen Johnson will go in category leagues next year? I'm keeping him with a 9th round. Yeah, that's a good play in keeper leagues. I actually get to keep him with a 15th rounder in one of my leagues next year. I say. That's the rebuild year. That's the rebuild team I was talking about. I put some money in the piggy bank this year, but now I get to reap the rewards. I think I've got Kobe White in like the 13th and Jalen Johnson in the 15th and Jalen Duren in like the 12th or something like that. Oh, yes. Dano's team is ready. However, I think he probably goes in the 5th round next year. I know he got hurt a bunch, but is there any reason to think that Jalen Johnson won't be able to repeat what ended up being basically a top 50 valuation this year? Like, what do we think is going to get worse? Field goal percent? I don't think so. He means mostly dunking. He hits a three-pointer, but most of his shots are in front of the rim. You could even see his free throws get better. What if they give him more to do? I like the more to do. I think he'll go in the 5th round next year, and then people are going to have to hope that he doesn't turn an ankle every 3 days, but that's my guess. How high do you think Wemby gets drafted next year? I think he goes top 3. The fears on Wemby, probably whether or not the Spurs are actually competitive. He ended up playing in 71 games this season anyway. So, you know, right up there with the guys at the very top of the board. And over the last month of the year, he was number 2 behind Nikola Jokic. Yes, you know, a lot of that was on the shoulders of 4.5 blocks per ball game because he was bad in both percentages and turnovers. Hopefully those things improve for Wemby. And it's rare to say that, like, one guy can win you a category, but this is a situation where one guy can kind of win you blocks. There was literally nobody in the NBA who had a larger single category impact in anything than Wemby had in blocks the last half of this year, basically. And I'm trying to figure out if there's anybody that was like even in the vicinity of that type of production. And the answer is no, not really. Like, let's see. Is anybody close in anything? Wemby was like a solid 6 standard deviations above the mean. And the second biggest one over the last 2 months, I think, was Sabonis averaging like 15 rebounds a game. And that's not even close. Not even close. So that's what it means to be able to win a category with one guy. He's doing the work of more than half of a fantasy basketball team himself. And the next highest shot blocking over that same 2 months was Rudy Gobert. 4.5 for Wemby, 2.3. He doubled up the number two guy. You literally needed the number two and number three guys together to cover up Wemby in that category. So unless you had Gobert and like Miles Turner on your team together, you were going to lose blocks to a team with Victor Wembanyama, effectively, second half of the year. Which does bring into focus the question of like, well, is that worth it? You know, is that the kind of thing you want to spend a number one pick on? Because Wemby is one of the very rare guys in the first round who's like definitively bad at multiple categories. He's so unbelievable in others that it doesn't matter. I mean, it matters, but he's still top three despite it. But if you take blocks out of the equation, Wembanyama over the last 2 months goes from number two to number 31. That's the impact of one category. From basically the best player in fantasy to a mid-third rounder. And this is kind of like the JJJ phenomenon last year. Now, I'm not going to say that Wembanyama is going to vanish off the face of the earth the way that Jaren Jackson did for the first half of this year. But what if? Where did JJJ finish this season? Jaren Jackson got up to number 53. He only blocked 1.6 shots per game. What if, that's like half basically of what he did the year before. What if Wembanyama goes from 4 blocks a game down to 2 and something? He's not going to fall to 30-ish. But it's that same thing where it's like, am I going to spend a top three pick on this dude who's not helping me in field goal percent, actually hurting in that? Kind of neutral in free throw over the course of the year, but late in the season, he was actually a negative there, and his turnovers are out of control high for a guy who only averages 3.5 to 4 assists a ball game, who was not, for most of the year, that large of a positive in scoring. This is not me trying to say you shouldn't take Wembanyama at the top of the board. I just think there's still better choices in that top couple. And I think he's going to go first in a bunch of spots. And then people are going to be like, this is the most fun thing ever. And they're going to be right because he's insane. And he's putting up lines that make you cackle maniacally with noises you didn't know your body could make. But also, if you take blocks out of the equation, his numbers are kind of, 24 and 12. I like it. But 46% shooting, he had the lowest field goal percent of anybody in the top 10 over the last 2 months of this year. Again, I'm looking at like when he was on his absolute biggest heater. His best stretch of the year was the last 2 months. Of anybody in the top 10, he had the lowest field goal percent at 45.7. He had the second lowest free throw percent of anyone in the top 10 over that stretch. In fact, he was tied with LeBron, who was number 10. What an end of a season for LeBron, huh? Ooh, he stuck the whole thing in my face. I thought he was going to fade this year, and he was perfectly fine. And that's all well and good and everything, but it's pretty weird that Wemby had either the worst or tied with the worst in both of those, and still number two, by the way, over that stretch, just behind Nikola Jokic. But that's because he averaged 4.5 blocks per game. So what if, and you can't take that all the way out, but what if Wemby doesn't block 5 shots a freaking game next year? What if teams start to just not go right at him? What if teams change the way they play around him? It's going to be an adjustment. Not to say that he's not going to have lead the league in blocks. He probably will. But 4.5? If you're bad in both percentages and turnovers, and you're not blocking 4.5 shots a game, you certainly don't deserve to be drafted inside the top 3. Question, of course, becomes who do you take over him? And I don't know that there are that many great options. Jokic is always up there. Shea was number 7 over the last 2 months. He stopped getting massive steals numbers. His stuff was good, mind you, but not mind-blowing. AD was up there. That's what happens if you take the shot blocking away from Wendy and replace it with very good percentages. It's the difference between those dudes. Certainly gives you a lot of options. If you take Wembanyama, you never have to take another shot blocker as long as your draft goes. But, yeah, I mean, I get it. He's going to be super fun. But is it going to be worth top three? We'll see. How on earth did we do a 40-plus minute podcast when the season's over? I don't know. We just talk and we talk and we talk until we stop talking. There you go, Christopher Guest. Eat your heart out on that one. I'm Dan Vespers. We got a lot left to talk about in the offseason. This is just show number one as I carve a slash into the wall of my offseason prison cell over here. We'll talk some actual basketball games tomorrow because the play-in tournament begins. Western Conference play-in games. Lakers-Pels, the 7-8 to advance. And Kings, how the hell did they fall all the way to the 9? Kings-Warriors, the battle for the Bay. And also to not get eliminated. That's the 9-10 out west. We'll talk about that tomorrow. We'll also get into something else. I don't even have to tell you what. So long for now, everybody. I'm Dan Vespers for Fantasy NBA Today. Off-season time. Tis upon us. Hasta mañana.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.